I had one sister and she died 2 years ago and I was involved in an exhibition using the poems and textiles. But the exhibition was called the 13th month because I think when somebody passed, it spent the first year kind of saying this time last year, this time last year. So the 13th month is then quite significant. And this is short. The 13th month, I do most of my crying in the car. Cold mastermind quizzes in my head. Specialized subject. Sisters between the years 1958 and 2012. I don't have all the answers, but I'm good. What crappy singer did your sister love? Barry Manilow, I shout. Though the rear view mirror shows only road, I know there's air. Deirdre is whispering in Magnus Magnusson's ear.
Thank you, Donna. Next up we have Angus Daly.
Thanks. I was invited to a party there at the last day and need to cook something, but I couldn't cook much, so I started writing a little poem instead. So it was for Emily. She was just made a citizen there of the So it's called I See a Star. I see a star and another, then up comes the sun. First a little light, then the clouds are soft, golden bright. Their undersides get blotted, purple pink, edging west, the hilltops glimmer. Bracca on lay, stretching, the tribes bless the day, in Cork, Galway, and onto New York. Sair, Sair Onoch, America, America Onoch. Aaron, Aaronock, free woman, American, an Irish citizen too. Red, white, and blue wrapped now, green, white, and orange. Balloia Art, the drums declare, first in Cork, then on to New York. Cassiopeia and Kavanagh, Yeats and his dreams all treading softly, with Jackson and Frost too. Diamond rights, new stars, old responsibilities. Kiarta, Gialta, Dulgus, Corha, Baloyer Art is Erda Hare. Bless you and all your work. I see the moon and a star glimmer. Then up comes the sun. First a little light, then the clouds, a soft, golden bright. Shine.
For you, Margaret, there, Angus. Next we have Shane Bourne, please.
Thanks. So I'm going to read a short poem that I wrote for Stanzas, the poetry and prose night for young people that you in Limerick with some friends. And if you want to see darkness, go to the north of Finland. And this is what this is about. It's called To Hide from Our Strange North. The sun struggles up, panting over the horizon, clawing his way up the back of your rigid spine, to fall down and pray, let me shine on, let me shine on. And the moon, she howls in pleasurous grief, for the night is hers and hers alone. She cannot fathom the light, the stars fade out as the stars fade out. Now the ground is hued as color immense testifies the call of Aurora, who whispers aloud the sound of white desert. Look me in the eye this time. Look me in the eye this time. And you sigh, can we have one more night? And I say, we have only the night. A pulling of covers required to hide from our strange north, to hide from our strange north. Thank you.
Thank you, Shane. Next we have Donal Maloney.
This is a short story that I wrote over 10 years ago now, but I made a mess of it when I wrote it, and I come back to it every couple of years and try and make it shorter and better. We'll see. I don't know if I got there or not, we'll see. It's called Election Day Blues. It's lonely not being a citizen on election day. The Arab I'm assuming on the bench beside me seems to feel it too. A while ago he was scribbling in a notepad, his biro dashing from right to left across the page. As he wrote, his face was a picture of concentration and purpose. Now it just looks anxious. The couple on the bench opposite me are cuddling and smooching. They're South Americans, probably Ecuadorians. The woman is about 25 and is chubby with thick glossy hair. She's wearing a short skirt that shows off her dark brown legs. It's cold today, almost too cold to be sitting outside on a bench, and definitely too cold to be bare-legged, I would have thought. She and her man are sitting side on to each other, and his head is hidden behind hers as he kisses her neck and says words in her ear that make her smile. The Russians are by far the biggest grouping in the park, taking up the full length of the central path. I call them Russians, but they might be Ukrainians or Georgians. They're mostly middle-aged to elderly with a few younger couples and kids. They tend to shift around from bench to bench, the mini-groupings fluid and changing. It's Sunday, and they're here every Sunday. Despite all the movement, they don't make much noise, and even less so today. A stocky man with red hair and twinkly eyes slowly traverses the central path, sharing jokes and handshakes as he goes. It takes him 15 minutes to walk the 20 yards through the park, and he leaves behind him a trail of cheerfulness. On the far side of the park, there are sparse groups of South Americans and Black Africans, just enough to have all the benches occupied. I was lucky to get a bench at all on a Sunday. Some of the South Americans are sipping on cans of beer. Two of the Africans are arguing in French. I'm North European, say Irish, and I'm here alone. As you'll have gathered, I'm in the immigrant quarter, and this is our park. It's small and round and has one straight central path and two curving outer ones. Skirting the latter are palm trees and acacias, fig trees and London planes. Lining both sides of the central path are huge trees with big leathery leaves and a great tangle of buttressed roots. Moreton Bay figs they're called, and they come from Eastern Australia. Immigrants too then, and the furthest from home at that. Behind me across the road is a school turned polling station for the day. Every so often I turn to look at the Spaniards going in and out. 3 days ago, terrorists blew up four trains in Madrid, killing about 200 people, according to latest estimates. Killing, maiming, bereaving. I said earlier that it was almost too cold to be sitting outside on a bench. Here on the Mediterranean coast, around 200 miles from Madrid, it doesn't get much colder. And then not for long. Anyway, we're moving in the other direction, into a long summer. In Spanish, the word for vote is the same as the word for voice, voz. Today, in this park, we have been voiceless. Next year, I won't be here. I'll have gone home into the bosom of full citizenship entitlements. Most of the others around me will still be here and still voiceless when the next election comes around. Those killed in the Madrid trains are voiceless in the most radical way possible. Yesterday, Spanish citizens had their day of reflection, the name for the day before an election when campaigning is not allowed. This election, there's been an awful lot to reflect on. For us in the park, today is our day of reflection, I suppose, though no action will follow it. But all the same, how peaceful it is here for us.
Thank you, Donald. Next, could we have Paddy Doyle, please?
How's it going? Voice of Lawton is a lovely poem, which you all called I'll Tell Me the Truth About Love. This one's called I'll Tell Me the Truth About Sex. Some say that sex is quite sacred, that it's even a gateway to God. Others say that it's sordid and mean, and that tantra is all a cod. My mother won't speak on the subject. It makes her face turn red. My father just laughs and giggles whenever the word is said. Does it make you feel like weeping or smile like an innocent child? Is it safe for civilized people, or does it belong in the wild? Are some people more compatible, or is one body as good as the next? Is it serious or totally laughable? Well, tell me the truth about sex. The newspapers speak of it daily in a confusing number of ways. where some of those pastry pictures can leave you in quite a daze. It's mentioned in leading headlines and in personal ads at the rear, where you can find quite a varied selection, whether you're straight, bicurious, or queer. Does it have to cost you a fortune, or is it supposed to be free? Can you buy it when you go out shopping, or does it grow like fruit on a tree? Is it safe to do after eating, or should one first have a rest? Is it okay to do when first meeting? Oh, tell me the truth about sex. The clergy appear to condone it, as long as your conscience is clear, and your intention is making a baby, but there are other reasons, I hear. Yet they themselves don't enjoy it, or so the people are told. They are said to prefer flagellation as a method for purging the soul. Does it make one feel more contented? Is it heightened by smoking some grass? Is there only one door you can enter? Or is it kosher to come on the ass? Should each partner go down on the other, or is a hygienic distance best kept? Should a son stay away from his mother? Well, tell me the truth about sex. Some say it's a cure for depression, that it can also add years to your life. Some say you should try different partners, more say you should stick with your wife. My friend claims he's addicted, that he can't go without it for long. His girlfriend says she's exhausted and that too much of a good thing is wrong. Does it make you feel like Jesus did, as he ascended through the sky? Or does it make you feel weak and abused, as it did when you were a boy? When it brings up those ugly feelings, do you need to stop and rest? Is it supposed to be so revealing? Or tell me the truth about sex? Will I come without warning? Or will I feel myself reaching a peak? Will I crow like a cock in the morning? Or will I groan like a whale in the deep? Will my mind be as still as a mountain? Or will it scream like exploding fireworks? Will the moon drift by in slow motion? Or tell me the truth about sex?
There must be something in the air tonight. We're all learning the truth about sex tonight. Okay. Thanks, Matthew. Next we have Charles Clark, please.
I see drinks, I see sandwiches, therefore it's a party. This is not very party at all, but it has a certain Christmas aspect, I suppose. Christmas still. Is it a good studio practice to pose the Indian on the water tower with bow and arrow against a blue desert sky, skeletal tree and ranks and ranch sign? A Christmas card from the West, a Manichaean mission, a message of good and evil from the back lot.
Thank you, Charles. Next we have Seamus Harrington, please.
Thanks, Paul. I got an email last month reminding me about get ready for next June, Camino, forward planning. How are you? So, this is from Canada, in transit, poetry for people on the move. At the cathedral. They flood from the coaches onto the monumental stairway, jam up the side doors, dam the porches and passageways. Crooked pilgrims with long staffs and oversized backpacks festooned with laundry are forced to yield. We muster on the left, line up for our hosts, with the patience of Job, form a bottleneck at the turn by the nave, an elderly soul with an orphan sock, glasses dark as the apostle's grave, box at the bodily crush, next to an incensed usher, his semaphore arms, veins bulge on his forehead, the colour of a pillar of jasper, a snap of his fingers, summons fresh reinforcements. His skill takes our breath away, a canon and curate pressed into service, chalices at the ready and full. We peer in awe through the scent at the terrible height of grime-vaulted hymns, flash bulbs fire as anchormen the monks take up the strain on the marvellous line. Thank you.
Thank you, Seamus. Next we have Ciarán Na Carta.
Yeah, thanks for keeping me afloat on the mic last week. Not my time come to avail. I've never repeated a poem, but I've also had a mantra to, you know, say, don't leave a job until she's done right. And so, to my hero from afar, a bit of shouting, a bit of crying, a bit of swearing, cut the cord, because baby, you've been wielding your body like a sword, and it's a little much for me to absorb, or you to ask to. Yeah, I've been doing so well on you, baby, but I'm living week to week, and though from this distance no climb seems too steep, I'll be honest with you, Monday's looking bleak, and the forecast ain't been helped as your kisses stain my cheek, with heart and hands out of reach and no words left to speak. And your tears rain on my parade like some divine air raid, a casual crusade, a miserable charade, how to kill a love in 10 days. Feel like my passion's being played for a fool's. And if your performance must persist, then I'll do well to resist, and I really must insist. Time's a ticking on my aching wrists, holding on to something that no longer exists or ought not to, not in the palm of your hand, or the clutch of your fist, or the warmth of your breast, nor the breath of your kiss. You know, put me on a list, call it chances missed, or well-meaning cast aside, lost to the abyss, whichever you prefer, or feel would accurately refer to this magnetic blur which you have failed to preserve. Call it whatever you feel it deserves. And yeah, I'm partial to cigarettes now, but addicted to that moment to myself, and I'll let you figure out which is better for my health. Yeah, we've got mirrors and feelings, and there are patterns on the ceilings, and a limit to our access to the sky. But without your consideration, there can be no expectation of a future fresh air high. Yeah, we weren't too far shy of staying eye to eye, and now that the tears have dried, I feel a little better, with cheeks a little redder, so I'm writing you this letter. To my hero from afar, hope you're well wherever you are. I'm at a safe distance now, underneath a lamp, writing a response to your cry. Why did our love die? Here's my theory on a postage stamp. You ask why.
Why? Next we have Lucia Pascal, please.
I am old and the winds of my days blow slow. I remember my youth and the woman with hands like tree bark, one ring for every year of hammer and bow. In those days I was blind. Now I see that the soil in the cracks of her palms was not rot but gold, time buried in crevices of flesh, love stained. Here I lie at the end of my days, and my hands too feel of bark, my body too smells of dirt, and my hair, a silver mass, a thinning stream. I think back to when the wind was wild and my body round. Round body and miles of flesh, the bowl at the foot of my bed brimming with ripened fruit. Now the land where I am from is thirsty. It is no longer the season of harvest, but the season of sleep.
Thank you, Chia. Next we have Max Green.
Hi. Lovely description of the grey skies of Scotland there. So reminding me of this poem. I'm just writing it. I walked to the beach with my sisters there, and on the beach was all these like foliage from the water, and of course they trotted off, and I had to take the pictures and try to draw it. So it just reminded me of my mother and her fur coat of Christmas silver fur was trotted out for Christmas, the pre-DC. So this is called Sandleys. Near the moon rocks beached on Roundstone, on the silky milky sand, rivulets carve leaves ridged by shifting grains. Micro aqueducts draw back to sea. Rainbow sheep in shaggy jackets peer over dunes. A carnivy colour, grow of colour. They blend the last wisps of the hidden sun. Two disappearing sisters as cream pebbles cast to a widening horizon. Shadow follows, but don't look back. I trail behind. My pen will trap the silver mink from velvet skies. I will cup my hands for mother of pearl water. I am wrapped in comfort, held by grey kid gloves, curled like a kitten near a filigree brooch, a leaf on a lapel. Now holy souls are here too, perched and drawn on the skellig. They linger too with me. Stay with the sand leaves.
Another turn, Max. And next we have Connor Clancy to the mic, please. Connor Clancy here.
Hey. Is that a poem? It's a song. Kieran said you wouldn't mind.
No.
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah, this is my first time at one of these, but I doubt it'll be the last. And this one's called Dandelions. It's a little thing I wrote.
The turtle shell showed itself, and when the silence fell, I didn't know where you planned to go. Vampires started to enter the circle, and I didn't know that you let them in. But there's no need to worry. No need to worry, but I didn't know back then, I didn't know back then you were in such a hurry, insatiable creature, my dandelion girl, such favorable features, the way your smile curls around me and I'm reminded of red wine and stormy beaches, our blueprints and designs torn into pieces. Then colors started to drain from both your cheeks, and I said, darling, you're looking pale. You said a mixture of what I expected and what I hoped never. But there's no need to worry. There's no need to worry. But I didn't know back then. I didn't know back then you were in such a hurry. If the waves are too high and too rough, will I dive to the deepest of seabeds just to lay my head down on the sand, my head next to yours, and your heart in my hands. But there's no need to worry. There's no need to worry, but I didn't know back then, I didn't know back then. You were in such a hurry, insatiable creature, my dandelion girl. Such favorable features, the way your smile curls around me, and I'm reminded of red wine and stormy beaches, our blueprints and designs torn into pieces.
Thank you for inviting. Next we have Patricia Walsh.
Okay, Bobby, Morsfield is short, Morsfield is Swedish. It's called liquid engineering. If she came in today with a handful of flowers, I would not stop her. But I would be so vulnerable as to cast a glance over, so as to make her obliged, even glad, to pass them to me. Thanks.
Thanks, Patricia. Next we have Simon Aronson.
This is another event, I'm very sure. It's called Festival of Fire. At its height, cresting the crossed poles at the teepee's tip further down the hill. Its heart 5 meters wide, center of circled trunks safely distant, creating a muse space for those captured by flame's unstoppable dance, fire's feelings across the spectrum. The next morning, white ash still smokes half-buried, torsoed trees. Potential ever-present. Thank you.
Thank you, Simon. Next, could we have Emily Davis-Fletcher.
So I don't have many Christmas poems, so I'm going to read this because there's like some red imagery in it, and there's a kind of an iconic male figure that is the antithesis of Santa. So this is called Menzies. You smell like you've been shot down the barrel of a gun. An outlaw slipping off your horse, hauling a mix of rain and sunset, in time to answer prayers and save me, the little lady, from myself or what the law allows. No life or godless cells cluster in your wake as you set fire to my velvet curtains and cut out with a cache of rubies like plucked hearts. So I never suspect a homemaker in a killer disguise who cleans and warms the place.
Thank you, Emily. Next, we have Cedric Bibon, please.
Well, I've been overloaded lately with all kind of fairly bad news about the word especially in a social scale, obviously with a very deep color of racism. So, well, obviously I do believe that this is the right crowd because Irish people also have the history with racism and all sort of segregation. So I'll just summarize what I thought. Injustice has no face nor hue. Injustice is the aspect of human society we must rule. This poem is about this, but more about colors in general. The wrong kind of light shines selfishly always. Doing so casts the wrong shadows, and another one of its own outdoors. It wants to shine brightly to shade, to erase the shade it makes. But until it scatters, what is the point of light without darkness? We now walk a world where the green is scarce. The blue stains the future of eye so well that many see red, and those who don't wear a yellow smile. A world doomed by cancerous, invisible ultraviolet? Maybe not if remain the shining suns of enlightened hearts. Either brown, pink, scarlet, or yellow, ensuring that no color is missing from the spectrum, is the only way we can still enjoy a rainbow.
Thank you, Cedric. And next, could we please have the fabulous Alma Macaulay?
Thank you very much. Seems as though themes are being collected. This one is called Experimental Spectrum. Experimental fiction puts its pen to the air and points at nothing in particular. All we ask as artists is to express, to find outlets of empathy for the state we are in. Time asks us to unveil ourselves, to burn holes through the paper-thin delusion of this linear rant, divulge the sounds that scarcely know themselves, sanctify the personal through the arms of the collective, bring wholeness and a selfless understanding of the adamant need for release. Unhook the grip of personal pain to hold the rod of universal purge, to heal and feel again the freshness that ensues a day. Give up your old sins of habit-formed repressions to unearth the ally of communal comradeship as every trauma turns to gold through the alchemical process of acknowledgement and response. Time is a great healer, but so too the speed of light can transform the darkest of nights into infinity's back garden. Burn the pages of your storybook to relieve the global agony of being. In this cycle, we are all composed the same, yet the fluidity of nature demands us to hold to no one thing, but to let go of all form. Only in the acceptance of change and the release of the past do we join in the unstoppable flow of transient life. In our compliance to the essential behavior of infinite expansion and contraction, we begin to breathe in unison with the universe, all one to a simple beat of truth and its telling. To let go is to receive. Aini, reciprocity, at the core of nature's care plan. Return to the self to discover the microcosmic connotations contained in the concentric circles, diminishing or increasing towards the macro, reflections on an ocean of insight. The body maps the meaning so as to tell the story of all life through the cells of the individual, all identical and yet utterly distinct. Perception leading the senses to abstraction only to spiral this understanding till it stands before us as spectrum.
Thank you, Alma. Next up, can we have Stanley Knott?
Thank you. Thanks, Paul, especially for getting really short notice. Okay, just quick introduction. I write poems constructed of song titles. This one is used, or is constructed using song titles from Beyonce. That's funny. I wrote it a while ago, and one of the things I love about writing is how things change, and looking at it today, I realised that she's angry about the question that I asked her. And the question is, what are you going to do when the, you know, when the fame dries out? It might work better if you do a number of things to me. One, imagine I'm black. Two, imagine I'm a woman. C, imagine I'm American. And D, imagine I'm shaking a rather large pot match. Listen.
Listen,
after all is said and done, my heart still beats. I'm fighting temptations, resentment, ego, and crazy feelings too. See, a woman like me, a hip-hop star, a diva, is scared of being lonely, has flaws, and all that I'm looking for is me, myself, and I. So if I can't take no more, or disappear from the radio, if the Diamonds, Halo, and Video Party say, I'm leaving, it's all over, I'll put it all in a love song and sing a song till the end of time.
Thank you, family. Next up, we have Orla to the right case. Orla?
I'll try this one. It's very new today, and I don't normally say poems either. So it's called 24/7 Job. I came to court to write, I said, though not to be in love. I mean, how could you say that in between the lines of the things that we post on Facebook? Still, it's a mystery why it seems to get harder the older we get to admit to our heart's desires or the wounded longing for some good old-fashioned down-to-earth sex or love in our aging rock and roll fantasies. While we sat before the one-eyed kings or the wild queens of the Stone Age jazz drifting like opium heat from the fire of our black crow dreams of a utopia nation, with the Pied Piper leading the Mary Frey, High Priestess, Punk Prophetess, Shakespearean soliloquy, witches, we all gathered all around the battlements, marvelling at the scenes, reduced to tears over the grief of a nation. My mother would call, or friends drop by. Sometimes I'd be working, or writing, or trying to figure out how to make some money. Sometimes it was obvious I was hurting, but rarely I'd speak about how I couldn't look you in the eye. So I still don't know why, as I'm walking home alone behind the drunken man snaking down the street, to feel safe, I retreat just out of danger's reach. I'm a pro at staying safe on midnight cowboy streets. And you know, she's right. We'll all be fine, and we're so lucky that we've met each other. Yes, she says as she lays her head on my shoulder, but it's the first time that she's ever been affectionate to me. And yes, I know it's because she wants me to keep her secret. And it's fine, I'm no judge. I feel for him, though, out in the great wide open, not knowing. And me, walking home still alone. But fuck it all, just let it go. But you know what's occurred to me? Self-help books are wrong sometimes. You're not supposed to let go of those you love. You're supposed to let go with them. The other letting go is supposed to be reserved for dead friends and relatives. So just let go. And let the secret threads of desire's secret source spin between the worlds and laugh as you agree with him that being blessed is a 24 fucking 7 job and we can only do our best.
Thank you, Order. Okay, we've got a three poet warning here. Three poets left on the mic, so, and then we're going to all head off to Maine. So you're very welcome to join us for some wine and snacks, maybe. So, Caldwell, please.
Exact change. Exact narrative. Exact the flesh from the spirit. Exact down by the river. Exact not a drop of nothing. Exact in purpose. exact temporal formulae within which our given tasks must reach completion, exact climax, exact from within, exact climate for lovers while loving, exact dimensions for receiving both goods and services, yes, that exactly, exact, extra, extra, read, exact, etc., exact my heart of darkness, exact by proxy, exact due only to a series of accidents that are described as happy, exact landscape, exact abstract fields of composition, exact change only when change is a given, recline exactly like a god or a goddess or a $2 hooker, exact remaining extant artifacts for evidence, exact narrative, exact only in instances of imprecision.
Thank you, Cal. Just what a great open mic tonight. Magic open mic. 23 people on the open mic tonight. Just two to go.
Whoa.
Okay, get off that camera.
Oh, that's my CV. I brought the wrong thing.
That's probably poetic as well,
though. Yeah, yeah. Creative, yeah.
Fiction.
A couple of bits from Knots by R.D. Lang. He's a Scots person as well. He wrote a couple of famous books. Most of them were Knots. There's one on the divided self. Most of the people my age would have probably read. So, there must be something the matter with him, because he would not be acting as he does unless there was. Therefore, he is acting as he is, because there is something the matter with him. He does not think that there is anything the matter with him, because one of the things that is the matter with him is that he does not think that there is anything the matter with him. Therefore, we have to help him realize that the fact that he does not think that there is anything the matter with him is one of the things that is the matter with him. There is something the matter with him because he thinks that there must be something the matter with us for trying to help him to see that there must be something the matter with him, to think that there's something the matter with us, for trying to help him to see that we are helping him to see that we are not persecuting him by helping him to see that we are not persecuting him, by helping him to see that he is refusing to see that there is something the matter with him, for not seeing that there is something the matter with him, for not being grateful to us, but at least trying to help him to see that there is something the matter with him, for not seeing that there is something, there must be something the matter with him, for not seeing that there must be something the matter with him, for not seeing that there is something the matter with him, for not seeing that there is something the matter with him, for not being grateful, that we never try to make him feel grateful. Lovely stuff. Do we have our final poet for the night down the end of the bar there? Is that Christy Parker? I think I can see him. There he is. There he is. Christy Parker.
Well, is that I didn't actually ask to go on the list, which means I've got to find a fucking poem somewhere. Right, oh, there's something here on this. When did you tell me you were going to come? I wrote this thing for the West Waterford newspaper for Christmas, and it's got a Christmas theme to it. It's actually too long, it's in three parts, I'm only going to read one of them. I'll introduce it pretty quickly, because it'll be Christmas Eve and we get on to this. Christmas is a time of multifarious social opportunities. It's a season when pubs, shops, halls, buses, car parks, sports arenas, the very streets themselves become platforms of grand scale. Bah! That's beyond average affability amongst humans. Whether between friends, acquaintances, or strangers, seasonal encounters of the jovial kind, there are certain sore feet and overspending. This may not always be a good thing, if truth be known. There are several categories of people best sidestepped at this time of the year. But they can demolish your Christmas with one fell swoop of the demolition ball of their presence. Take, for example, the possessive girlfriend, as in someone else's, keeping a friend of yours returned from afar for the festive season. Point of contact, open space, street, woods, beach, etc. Appearance, slimish, boot-wearing, coat-attired and be-scarfed, smiles vacuously every 12 seconds, stoop developing from constantly leaning forward to stare into his eyes, clean hair and ridiculously shiny skin. Pausing at the point of convergence, you casually engage your friend, a young, highly skilled engineer, on how things have been since he was forced to emigrate for work. 90 seconds into your chat, you realise the young lady by his side is squeezing his hand. The more you talk, the more persistently she squeezes it. She's also half reclining against his shoulder, like an unhinged gate or an insecure Labrador. She smiles aggrievedly at your every utterance without the slightest interest in what you are saying. She adjusts his collar to the chill air and smiles again. You realize you are being perceived as a rival for his attention. Soon the full dreadness of the evolving situation becomes apparent when she affectionately seizes his entire arm, apparently trying to subsume it into her own body, while simultaneously entwining her leg around his calf like an amorous penguin in a giraffe enclosure. Of course, you pretend not to notice, even when she starts to investigate a blackhead on his neck that she somehow failed to notice while they were in bed last night. She returns her gaze after 12 seconds to smile at you. You're now trying to talk to two people while desperately wishing one of them didn't exist. You try to decommission her discourtesy by making a slightly humorous observation about Irish water being awash with incompetence. She stares blankly at you, stifles a yawn with a mitted hand, then kisses her dearest on the cheek before suiting down the front of his jacket. This is no way to conduct a conversation, and you really want to leave. But a growing obstinacy, not to mention resentment, has set in, and your determination not to be intimidated by the creature's gruesome display of attachment causes you to stubbornly stay put. By now your friend too is feeling embarrassed, but he knows full well that this kind of attention might not last, especially if they get married, so he's going to make the most of it. And out of pure spite and knowing her boyfriend in ways that she will never ever comprehend, you divert the battle to home terrain. You ponder aloud the wisdom of playing Brady at left back instead of that disaster in waiting Stephen Ward. He starts to respond, but she, eager to show her affiliation with every aspect of his life, herself cannot resist volunteering an interest. She asks whether that would mean Brady no longer being on the panel with Giles and Dunphy. With perfect synchronization, revenge is sweet. I suppose you and her boyfriend laugh aloud and proceed to ridicule her depth of knowledge of the beautiful game. You depart as the whole thing extends into a vicious argument between them. Glancing back, you see she has released his hand. Thank you.